Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. It's July 24th, 2019. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. You can also call in at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. All right. So we're going to go ahead and give you a little update on Ron's condition. It's kind of humorous, but he's always been really good about allowing me to, use him as kind of a guinea pig and have us go through his health issues and how we're treating them, because he's a real live example of what goes on. And the thing is, when he has a health condition, when either of us has a health condition, one of the things that I can do is I can pay attention to what's going on with either of us. And I have I can do a minute by minute analysis of him, where that's not something I can do with my patients because I don't live with them. But when I live with somebody and I'm seeing them every single day, I get to monitor their health condition. And thank goodness that he is someone who allows me to do that, that he lets me help him with his health condition, so that if he has one, I get to work with him. He gets to benefit from me working with him. And I also get to try different things on him in a minute-to-minute way that I don't get to do with my patients, once again, because I don't see them every day. So the deal is, with Ron and Lyme disease, it gets curiouser and curiouser. So one of the things that I did is I did some more blood work to see what was going on with him. One of the things that we found with Ron was that he was sleeping a lot and he just couldn't get enough sleep. He was so tired. He would be sleeping 12, 14 hours when he could. And this was going on for a while, that he was just so, so tired. So one of the things I did, he'd never had a problem with his thyroid before, but I tested his thyroid. I tested his TSH, his thyroid stimulating hormone, and I tested his thyroid hormones, his T4 and his T3. So T4 is a pro-hormone. It's a hormone that's a precursor to the very active T3, which is your actual thyroid hormone. T4 is made in the thyroid gland. If you're not aware of this, the thyroid gland is found in your neck. If you push on that little bump that's in the middle of your neck, that's your cricoid cartilage, your Adam's apple, if you will. And if you go right below that, that's where your thyroid is. And if it's enlarged, you can feel it there. And if you have nodules, when you go to the doctor, your doctor might check your thyroid to see if it's enlarged, and they can tell that if there are lumps and bumps there. So if there are, we might be able to feel it. You can't always feel a big thyroid, because it depends on how the person's anatomy is. Some people's thyroids are set further back in their necks than others. And some people will have an enlarged thyroid and you can't feel them at all. And some people will have a thyroid that appears to be sticking out. You send them for an ultrasound, their thyroid's perfectly fine. So anatomy's a funny thing like that. Anyway, so if you check Ron's thyroid, I haven't really checked it lately, but anyway, I did the blood work for it. And so I tested his TSH. Now, TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. It's the hormone that comes from your pituitary gland. It is not a hormone that comes from your thyroid. It comes from your pituitary gland, and it causes the thyroid to work. So you have this neat hypothalamic pituitary axis. The hypothalamus is a gland that controls what the pituitary does, and that's in your brain. And the pituitary gland is a gland that's inside of your brain, sort of behind your nose. In fact, if you have a tumor on your pituitary gland, you can remove the tumor by inserting a scope and a clip to inside your nose. You don't actually have to open up the skull to get to the pituitary gland usually. That's how they often do it. That if you have, say, you have pituitary adenoma that's overproducing some hormone and they want to take it out, all they have to do is go through through your nose. Lovely, right? Anyway, so we checked Ron's TSH, which is a big hormone that you monitor when someone is hypo or hyperthyroid, his thyroid stimulating hormone. And I'd never seen this before in him, but his TSH was 14. So the reference range for TSH is 4.5, and he was at 14. And that certainly explained why he was sleeping so much. And it's shocking because, you know, Ron is a slender fellow and he doesn't tend to gain weight. I don't know if you do feel like you have a bit of a pooch now.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
No more than normal.
Right. So you don't feel like you're particularly gaining weight. And yet you were sleeping like, what, 12, 14 hours?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot.
Why don't you choke up on the mic? Why don't you put the mic in front of your face?
It is in front of my face.
It doesn't look like it. I can see you. It's not in front of your face. That's better.
My mouth is now on the mic.
Ew.
I was right there.
You should
there.
Move back. All right, yeah. Fine.
Oh, boy.
How long have you been on the radio?
A long time.
Really?
Yeah.
So you know, like, you pretty much know what to do.
I do.
Okay. All right.
I do.
I'm just checking.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, so poor guy had a TSH of 14, and the reference range is 4.5. So sometimes you'll get people who feel perfectly fine at 9. I had a patient not too long ago. That was their situation. They had a TSH of 9, and we would try to give them thyroid hormone, and they felt like they were hyperthyroid no matter what we did. So we're going to refer them to an endocrinologist because I don't know what to do about that. But this guy was sleeping 12, 14 hours a day, right?
Yeah, I was.
And feeling unrefreshed.
I wake up and I was still tired.
Why aren't you talking into the mic?
I am talking into the mic.
All right, fine. I can
hear me fine. I don't know about you.
All right. Anyway, so you were sleeping 12, 14 hours a night. The other thing that happened was you had an elevated thyroid peroxidase.
Okay, then.
It was only 30. So the interesting thing about thyroid peroxidase is it's an enzyme that helps you convert your T4 to T3, and you can make antibodies to it. When you make antibodies to it, generally you'll get a diagnosis of Hashimoto's thyroiditis. If you also have thyroid-stimulating immunoglobulins, then you might get diagnosed with Graves' disease. And we didn't test him for that because he has no signs or symptoms of Graves' disease. Graves' disease is generally, it's an autoimmune condition where you tend to get hyperthyroidism and you have thyroid-stimulating immunoglobulins present. So anyway, thyroid peroxidase is an enzyme that helps you convert your T4 to T3. T4, as I said, is a prohormone. What that means is it's not particularly active. It doesn't particularly stimulate your thyroid receptors. The job of thyroid hormone is to control metabolism in every cell in your body. So it's important for all of the functions in your body. When you're hypothyroid, you might have itchy skin, dry skin, menstrual irregularities, you might have foggy thinking, you might have sleep disturbances, you might have insomnia, you might sleep too much. Any function in your body can go off. You could have exercise intolerance, which you had, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, or where you just couldn't get out of your own way on the bike and stuff.
Yeah, I still can't. That's another problem.
Oh, you're still feeling like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we may have to tweak your dose. Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, so what we did was so we had thyroid peroxidase antibodies. So when you get those antibodies, they attack the hormone, they attack the enzyme that helps you convert your T4 to T3, which is active thyroid hormone. And they also attack your actual thyroid gland. He did not have thyroglobulin antibodies. So when you have some kind of a process going on in your thyroid gland, so say you have inflammation or you have nodules, you'll spill pieces of your thyroid into your blood, and your blood doesn't like that, so it'll start making antibodies to it. So you're more likely to have that happen if you have nodules, if you have some kind of a process going on, and it could be cancer and it could be not cancer.
Don't say that.
I know, but you don't have any thyroglobulin antibodies. So anyway, the reference range for thyroid peroxidase used to be 35, and they dropped the reference range maybe 5 or 6 years ago down to 9. I'm not sure why they did that. So if you had gotten this result 10 years ago, you would not have been flagged. You wouldn't have been told you have Hashimoto's. So I would say you have baby Hashimoto's. And in fact, my antibodies were as high as 25 once. And then I stopped eating gluten and they went down. Now, who knows why yours are elevated now? Chances are that you had a genetic predisposition to having Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and then having the Lyme disease was stressful enough that it stimulated you to manifest your Hashimoto's, unfortunately. So the first thing we did is I called Dr. LaGuardia and we got him some levothyroxine. And Dr. LaGuardia wanted to give you Armour. And I talked to Dr. LaGuardia about that, and I was concerned about that because Armour thyroid is porcine thyroid. And I was concerned that if you take porcine thyroid, that the antibodies are going to have something else to work on because you have more thyroid gland putting in. And that's controversial. There are some people who will use Armour thyroid when you have Hashimoto's, and then there's some people who won't. I figured let's give you the bioidentical T4 and see how that works. And if you have a conversion issue, I have stuff I can give you to help you with conversion from T4 to T3. But how do you feel? So we put you on 50 micrograms a day of levothyroxine. How do you feel?
I feel a lot better.
Be a lot better, but you still have exercise intolerance.
Yeah, I struggled this morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you had other days where you did not struggle?
The day that I ended up in bed for the day, I was fine on the bike in the morning. And then I crashed and burned bad. And that's when you started looking at the new lab work, and that's when...
You didn't have any thyroid hormone yet. So you haven't...
No.
So the first bike ride you did since taking thyroid hormone was today.
That's correct.
Okay. So so probably what we'll do is we'll let you have another bike ride and see how you do. And if you still feel like you can't get out of your own way, we're gonna increase your dose.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I've been off the bike since last Friday.
Yeah.
So I got on the bike on, what is it? It's Wednesday.
Yes.
So I've been off the bike for a long time, and it could be that I wasn't feeling that good just because I've been off the bike for so long. That's possible.
Maybe yes, maybe no. I know that I was on the bike on Sunday, and I rode 82 miles, and I haven't been on the bike until today. I felt really good today because I feel like I had rest. So a short amount of rest. So when you're off the bike for a short time, like 2 or 3 days, and then you get back on, usually you feel rejuvenated. If you haven't been on for 2 weeks, that's another story. But I mean, from Friday to Wednesday, I would expect you to be like, oh, I feel so good. I got some rest. So anyway, what I think the thing to do would be, see, this is what I'm talking about. He's in front of me, so I can treat him minute by minute. So what I'd like to see is I'd like you to do another bike ride. And if you still feel like you can't get out of your own way, because the next time you're going to ride will be Friday morning, right?
Yeah.
Unless you feel...
Unless I sneak out tomorrow and go for a short ride.
All right. So and
just
then
to see how I feel.
Any which way. And so that would not be a bad idea, because then we'd get some information if you would do that. So if you can do that, I would appreciate that, because then we could do something about it. So we'll see how you do. And if you're not feeling great, we're going to tweak your dose. So by the way, people, if you're hypothyroid, this is really what should be going on, in my opinion, that you should be... if you have a really good practitioner, they're going to be on the money in terms of what you're doing day by day and how you feel. My opinion is that if you have a smart patient, it's really a good idea to let them be able to control their thyroid medicine based on what they're doing, because your thyroid needs, I have a normal functioning thyroid. So do you think that my thyroid kicks out a bolus dose of 50 micrograms once a day? I don't think so.
Probably not. Huh?
No, my thyroid gland is going to kick out based on what I'm doing. So for those hill repeats that I did today, it's going to kick out a lot more. And for me sitting here talking to you, it's going to kick out a medium amount. And when I'm sitting around chatting with Francis, I think, it's going to be a little bit mellower. So it really depends on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you have exercise intolerance, but you don't have intolerance to other things, that's because your thyroid needs differ based on your activity. Doesn't that make sense?
Makes sense.
All right. So the thing is, you have Hashimoto's. So you know what that means?
It means that I have an autoimmune disease.
Yeah. Right? Also, it means no gluten for you.
Well, I don't eat gluten. is that going to be, how's that going to be different?
So it won't in your case. But just so you know, if you have Hashimoto's, my opinion is you should not eat gluten. So here's why. Because your thyroid gland has proteins on it that are similar to gluten, and the thyroid peroxidase antibodies attack those proteins. So if you put gluten on board, you're going to make more antibodies to the gluten and your thyroid hormone. You're going to make more thyroid peroxidase hormones. So that's probably controversial in terms of your standard endocrinologist, but in my experience, dealing with patients and also with me, thyroid peroxidase antibodies go down when you go off gluten. That is what I've seen. I've seen people's thyroid peroxidase antibodies, sometimes they go down, sometimes they go away. Mine, when they were at their highest, they were 25. Right now they're 8.
You.
The last time, right now, I went from 25 to 8.
Is that good?
It's great.
Oh. Okay.
Thyroid peroxidase antibodies. Yes, that's great.
Okay.
When I went off gluten when I, you know, after I found out I had slight Hashimoto's antibodies. But I'm euthyroid Hashimoto's. My thyroid hormones never go weird. They never go off. And in fact, I tried to take thyroid hormone a few years ago. And at first it was helpful, but then I started to get hyperthyroid symptoms no matter what dose I took. And then I said, okay, I can't take this at all. So I don't take it. And then I keep checking my TSH and it's fine. It's in the ones. Yours was 14. That was exciting. So what happened was I did this blood work and, you know, I'm waiting for the partials because what we do is in order to save paper, we don't let Quest Diagnostics print it until it's a final. And yet I can go on the computer. I can go online and look at the results as they're coming out. So I kept checking. And the first thing I saw was that you were hypothyroid. You were remarkably hypothyroid and mildly Hashimoto's. So I saw that. And then I kept checking, because I did your co-infections. I tested your co-infections. And finally, when we came back from Vermont on Sunday, I went into the computer and looked. And lo and behold, you had IgG for Babesia.
Hmm.
You did not have IgM for Babesia, which is interesting. But you had never been treated for Babesia. And your IgG was impressive. It was 1 to 256. It was pretty high. So that... there's only one way that that could happen, and that's if you had babesiosis. So since we know you were bitten by a tick because you had a Lyme Western blot that was lit up like a Christmas tree, you know, stands to reason that you also had babesiosis. And I don't care if the I don't believe that your body just dealt with the babesia and it's gone. And the other thing is you would have days where you'd be really tired and you get major sweats, which is a feature of babesiosis. The other thing I have to ask you is, do you have that? One of the symptoms of babesiosis is air hunger, where you feel like you can't quite catch your breath. Or do you have episodes like that?
I would say not any more than normal.
Okay. Well, you have that anyway.
Well, if I'm working out. Yeah.
Oh, but you don't have it. Air hunger is a feature of babesiosis. So if you have a tick-borne illness and you're like, I can't catch my breath, that might be babesiosis.
Yeah. Well, you know, climbing stairs, doing things like that. I would say yes, but I wouldn't say it's unusual.
Remember when you had that rash for a while and I said that's probably pityriasis rosea? I wonder if that really was pityriasis rosea.
I don't know.
Or if you had, you know, brewing babesiosis or Lyme and it was making a weird rash. I don't
know. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know how long I've had this in me at this point.
We don't know.
I don't even know. I don't even ever, I never found a tick.
Doesn't matter.
But. That's
does not matter. People,
right.
It doesn't matter if you, I hear people, I wasn't bitten by a tick. I don't care if you think you weren't bitten by a tick. You were probably bitten by a tick. Why? Because 70% of people don't get an erythema migraines rash. 70% of people don't get a rash.
Right.
If it's summer and you have weird symptoms and it's not like you're not coughing and sneezing, you don't have like a flu-like illness where you have a respiratory infection, but you have a fever, possibly joint pain, can't get out of your own way, chills, fever, sweats, neurological symptoms, joint pain, please get checked out for tick-borne illness. Not too long, a couple of weeks ago, I had a woman come in. It's very interesting. This woman came in and she had swollen, her knees were swollen. I said, were your knees swollen? What'd you do to yourself? Did you hurt yourself? No. You didn't injure yourself? No. They just swelled up all of a sudden. Have you ever had this before? No. Okay. Go to the walk-in. Get yourself some doxycycline. I'm sure that when you walk in there, they're going to be like, bitten by any bugs lately? Just like they said to you.
Just like they said to me.
So, yeah. So I was almost, I said, if I had a script pad in my hand, I would have prescribed for you. So so she did that. I also gave her some oregano oil because the carvacrol in oregano oil can kill Lyme disease. And then I also ordered labs for her. I ordered, you know, the battery of Lyme Western blot, babesia, and because you have babesiosis, I'm going to be paying attention now more to people to see if they have babesiosis or not. So now that we know you have babesiosis, you're going to have a week of azithromycin and etovaquone. So you're going to get another drug piled on. So you're off doxycycline and you're on cephalosporin, which is cefprazil, which is a good thing to do to change up the person's antibiotic. But we're going to put you on an anti-malarial program. So Babesia is an interesting bug because it's not a bacteria. It's an intras, well, I guess maybe it is a bacteria, but it's an intracellular parasite. Yeah. Great, right?
What does that mean?
It behaves like malaria. That's what it does.
Lovely.
It goes into your red blood cells and makes you tired. You are not anemic because we checked for that. And you're not anemic. So thank goodness for that.
That's good.
Yes.
Mm.
Also, being not anemic, it is unlikely you're Mr. Menezes, so you're not anemic, so you probably don't have thalassemia either.
Okay.
Yeah, thalassemia is Mediterranean anemia. You don't have that.
No.
So anyway, so we're going to get you on a week of atovaquone and azithromycin, which is the standard treatment for that. And I'm treating you with Nutramedics products. So I'm going to give you that Enula I gave you, which is a preparation of elecampane. That's to get your babesiosis.
Okay.
Yeah. So you've been taking the Enula yet?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, it's on the counter.
It still has an unbroken seal.
Well, it's on the counter. It's for that. That's your Enula.
Was that in a bottle? The one in the bottle?
Yeah.
Or the one in the, you also gave me another little thing with little tiny pills inside of it that I'm taking with my Berber and my something else.
Little tiny pills?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure which thing. That was was that the coleus?
I guess so.
Maybe it was the coleus.
I don't know. There's so many right now.
I know. It's bad.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And to try to keep it all in order. And
I gave you a sheet.
I know.
Also, it's not forever. It's not forever. No, I gave you coleus. And the reason I gave you coleus is a lovely anti-inflammatory herb. You can use coleus for autoimmune conditions. You particularly can use it for psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, but it is also indicated for Hashimoto's thyroiditis to help to bring the inflammation and the antibodies down. So that's why I gave him the coleus. And then I also gave him this preparation from Nutramedics called Enula. And Enula is a preparation of elecampane, and it's useful for parasites. So that's why we gave it to him. And, it is indicated in the use for babesiosis. So now he's got Banderol, Cemento, and Enula as his antimicrobials. And then he's got Berber, which is going to help his lymphatics, his liver, and his kidneys escort the stuff out of his body. And then he's also got Pinella, which is to help with neurological symptoms. So it's really nice. So yeah, it's a lot of stuff, but it's a lot of, it's worth doing. And by no means do I think that Ron should avoid conventional medicine at this point, because antibiotics are helpful, but you don't just do the antibiotics. There's a lot of things that we can do as well, and we can do them long term. The thing is that you have to be careful with antibiotics, because antibiotics can definitely mess up your gut flora. And what we're doing for Ron is we don't know if he's entirely dairy intolerant, but not enough to keep him from drinking kefir. So you drink kefir you do kefir most days.
Yeah, I need to get some more. But yep.
So the kefir is, I can get you. Do you want plain kefir?
Sure.
You like plain, or do you want a flavor?
Plain's good.
Okay, we'll get you some plain kefir.
Yep.
And the thing about kefir, if you aren't bothered by the dairy, kefir has marvelous probiotics in it. The probiotics in kefir persist. There's many, many of them, and they persist in your body, and they persist longer than the probiotics that are in yogurt. So if you can consume kefir, it's really good for you. If you can't consume dairy, you can do water kefir. You can buy, if you don't feel like making it yourself, you can make it yourself, and you can make it out of coconut water. But if you can't do that, you can buy water kefir at the store. There's very common brands at the store that you can buy that have all the probiotics that are in kefir with no dairy. And I like to have those around, even though I do consume dairy, but that drink I really enjoy. So just because you can't do dairy kefir doesn't mean you can't enjoy the benefits of the probiotics. So you're getting those.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking Saccharomyces boulardii.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure you're taking that Saccharomyces boulardii.
That's the stuff that's in
the refrigerator. So Saccharomyces boulardii, so Saccharomyces boulardii is a probiotic yeast that can't be killed by the antibiotics that you're taking. Now, if you were taking, if we decided we needed to give you a cyst buster like tinidazole or metronidazole, then you'd have an issue with the Sac boulardii, and we would just have to, you know, give you the antibiotic, give you the probiotic, give you the antibiotic, give you the probiotic. But, and that's kind of what we're doing with the kefir and any other ferments that you consume, because the ferments have bacteria in them that can be killed by the antibiotics you're taking, unfortunately. Mm. But, you know, there's different ways to get ferments. Like if you don't want to do kefir, you can consume fermented vegetables. You can, and if you can make it yourself, you can make your own sauerkraut or your own fermented vegetables. And if you don't have time or you can't be bothered, you can get lovely fermented vegetables at health food stores. And you can get sauerkraut, you can get beet kvass, you can get fermented carrots, you can get fermented daikon, you can get fermented cucumbers. You know, otherwise known as pickles. But all of these things are pickled. But what you get is you get live probiotic, things that have not been pasteurized. So you got, or that have been minimally pasteurized, so that they're continuing to ferment even when you buy them. So they're going to taste pretty fermented when you eat them. But you're going to get these wonderful probiotics from them. So, and by the way, when you eat organic vegetables or you eat vegetables that have been grown and not sprayed and cared for with great love and are grown with compost, they're going to have probiotic on them. So when you buy pristine vegetables from the supermarket that have been sprayed and excessively washed or irradiated, they're not going to have probiotic on them. We're not going to have significant amounts of probiotic. But if you buy it from your local hyper organic grower, I say hyper organic, and that's not an official term, because the we have growers around here that don't spray with anything, and they compost and they rotate their crops, and they do things. They grow in a way that's, I call it beyond organic, because organic is a certification you can get from the USDA. These people aren't necessarily certified, but you can talk to them at the farmers markets about how they grow their food. And they grow them in absolutely pristine conditions where they use their compost, they rotate the crops, and they use mineral salts, and they have extremely nutritious food that's going to have good bacteria on them. So there you go.
Yum.
All right. So that's what's going on. All right. So that's the update on Lyme disease. The exciting things that we figured out that Ron has Hashimoto's, and now we had to put him on thyroid medicine, and we're going to tweak the dose until you feel good. And we also found that you had babesiosis in addition to Lyme disease. Now, by the way, this is not unusual, people. So if you're diagnosed with Lyme disease, you might want to look at your doc and make sure you get tested for co-infections.
Get a whole bunch of things tested.
Various people will have, I've seen over the course of the last year or two, I've seen Lyme, I've seen babesia, I've seen anaplasma, I've seen ehrlichiosis, I've seen Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Occasionally I see Bartonella. You are not positive for Bartonella.
Well,
one of
good.
The ways you diagnose Bartonella is Bartonella gets a weird rash. So you'll see somebody who doesn't have a reason to have stretch marks on them, and they'll have a strange misplaced lesion that looks like a set of stretch marks, that looks like purple stretch marks. And when you see that on a person where it's just like random, it's not on a place where they would have gained or lost weight, but it's like somebody, it's like finger lakes. It's like somebody scratched them and it came out stretch marks. That's probably babesiosis. That babesiosis does that. It makes a weird stretch mark like rash. So when you see that, suspect babesiosis. Did I say it? I said babesiosis. I'm wrong. I'm sorry. Start over. If you have a stretch mark like rash, it's Bartonella.
Bartonella. Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise known as, guess what? Cat scratch disease.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Mm. And I don't know if it's called cat scratch disease because cats can give it to you, or because the rash.
Maybe it looks like you've been scratched by a cat.
That's right.
That would make sense.
Right. I'm not sure if cats can give you cat scratch disease, or if it's that, or if it's because it looks like you've been scratched by a cat. Because Bartonella, there's two species that we test for. One is Bartonella henselae, the other is Bartonella quintana, and one is like Nairo quintana. Pretty sad. Anyway, so the Bartonella henselae, one is cat scratch disease, and the other one is trench fever.
Uh-huh.
Well, you were tested for those, and you were not found to have them. So
right.
Yay. So that's what's going on. Okay, so let's move on to something else for a little while. I wanted to talk about, I was trying to think about ways to increase your lifespan? How can you live a long life? And here are some habits that are linked to a long life. I thought that would be an interesting thing to talk about. Okay, so the first thing to help you to live a long life is don't eat too much.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shock. If you reduce, there's some studies that show that if you reduce your calories by 10 to 50% from normal, it can increase your maximum lifespan. So if you're overeating all the time, you could shorten your life.
Wow, breaking news, huh?
Yeah, I know. Well, and why might this be? Well, if you eat less, you are not stimulating your insulin as much. You're not spending as much time in inflammation. You're going to have less body fat. And body fat, as we talked about before, body fat is not inert tissue. Body fat carries inflammatory compounds in it. So the less inflamed you are, the healthier you're going to be. The only thing is if you restrict your calories too much, it does have side effects that you're going to be hungry, your body temperature is going to go down, your metabolism is going to go down, and your sex drive can go down. So you have to be careful of that. If you're restricting it so much that you're not enjoying your life, you have to work with that. But I would say the thing is to eat enough food, but don't eat too much. And you can practice Harahachi Bu.
What is that?
Harahachi Bu is the Japanese practice of only eating until you're 80% full.
Okay.
Don't ever eat till you're 100% full.
So don't eat like an American.
Okay. Yes.
Sorry.
All right.
Well, my sister just came back from Canada.
Oh, that's nice.
And I had a nice conversation with her, and she said, she said the Canadians are all like fit and they look great.
Where was she?
The central Canada area.
Was she in Ontario?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, was she in Toronto?
Possibly around that area.
Or Ottawa?
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. That's interesting. Well, it'd be more interesting.
But I had that same observation when I used to go up to Quebec.
Yes.
Too. You'd look around, and if you were walking down the streets in Quebec, you could pick out the Americans because they stuck out like they were wearing, bright neon.
Yeah.
They just stuck out like a sore thumb.
Oh.
Because the Canadians are a lot more aware of their nutrition, I think.
The Canadians have expensive gasoline.
Yes, and they have expensive gasoline, and they have national health care.
Right.
So they are...
they're not spending money on health care, so they can spend it on health.
It is to their advantage to stay healthy.
Right.
It really just... It's encouraged, let's put it that way.
Yes. Well, if you're Canadian, you're going to find ways to not use your car as much because gas is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also going to be encouraged to be more fit. And I also wonder if part of your deal is you don't have to work in such a way that you have to make sure that you have health care. You don't have to work as much or as hard and you have less stress. And I know that one of the things that makes me eat more than I should or eat things that I shouldn't eat is stress.
I'll agree with that.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does.
Way.
That if I'm sitting with a stack of charts like this, you can't see how me holding my arm up. But if I have a huge stack of charts at the end of the day, I'm going to be picking at something to eat.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, and I know why I do it. This is why I do it, because when I don't get rest and relaxation, I feel like it weighs on my life. I feel like I'm not enjoying my life the way that I want to be. And so eating is a pleasure, and it's a pleasure that I can get while I'm doing my charts.
Mm-hmm.
But I
eat way too much while I'm working.
Whereas what I really need is, and so I'm partially eating because I'm not enjoying what I'm doing. I'm sort of bored, and I'd rather be just, I need more rest. And when you don't get rest, part of why you eat is to keep yourself going. And part of why you eat is because you're not happy with what you're doing. Because really, in part of what you need to do in life is rest. And, one of the things that I talk about is when you're wealthy, when you're wealthy, you can have specific things that you want. Like you'd have that nice bike or that nice boat or that nice house. But none of that to me is worth anything if you can't rest. I think the greatest thing about having plenty of money is that if you're sick, you can rest and recover. If you're tired, you can mm-hmm. rest. If you had a busy day yesterday, you can lay around today. That is such a luxury. That to me is the greatest luxury of all. To be able to rest and have a place to do it is that is the greatest luxury of all. I mean, and I would gladly have less stuff and be able to rest. You know, just be able to lie, because, you know, I love to power lie about. And I do really love to come home after a long day and just lay around. That I'm like so grateful that I have a nice house to be able to do that in and just lie around and play my stupid video game or stare at the Tour de France or whatever we do when we get home. I like lying around. We have loungy chairs on the back porch. And the loungy chairs in the back porch are a mixed bag because we have bugs. So I wish we had more bats so they would eat the bugs. Hey, something funny happened to me today. So I'm going to get back to how to extend your life, but something funny happened to me today. I was climbing the hill on North Bedlam,
mm-hmm.
and a bird pooped on me.
Yay, welcome to the club.
Oh.
I've been there.
I couldn't believe it. It pooped right in my arm.
Yeah, they do that.
I didn't see it.
They don't really care where they poop, you know.
No. Yeah, so he wasn't aiming at me?
I've told you my bird poop story on the bike, right? The one where I'm out in Lebanon, which, you know, is obviously a very
rural
farmy area,
yeah.
right? And I'm riding down, I believe I was on Route 87.
Yeah.
And I'm riding along and I got a big splotch right down this, right down the side of my face.
Uh-huh.
And I looked up and there was a bird.
Oh.
Flying.
Oh.
There were no trees anywhere. The bird was like really, really far away. This bird was like pinpoint accuracy. Unbelievable.
Wow.
And it was just one of those random things. And it's like, of all things, I mean, there were, you know, tens of thousands of cubic feet that could have landed on. Who did it land on? Me. There was nothing else for it to hit.
Has that ever happened to you before?
That, I got pooped on at a racetrack in New York once too.
So twice in your whole life
yeah.
you've been pooped on.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people have how many times that happens to people, of people that never happens to, or just the odds are at some point that's going to happen to you if you spend time outside. I don't know. And
or it could never happen to you.
I was climbing a very woodsy road. That's a gorgeous road, North Bedlam Road. It's very pretty there.
It's very pretty.
Yeah. All
I
right.
like that road a
so,
lot.
So you know what else you can do to extend your life? You can eat more nuts. That's provided that you're not allergic to the nuts.
I was going to say, aren't people sometimes allergic to
nuts? Yes. If you're allergic to nuts, obviously you shouldn't eat them. Also, there's a question as to whether it would be better if you eat the nuts that they have anti-nutrients in them. So they have, unfortunately, they have phytates and oxalates in them, but you can get rid of some of that by soaking them. So if you're concerned about phytates and oxalates, you can soak nuts overnight. And then if you want them a little crunchier, you can dry them. You can, you know.
I was going to say, if you soak them, they're going to get all soggy.
They do get soggy. And then you can dry roast them for a little bit. And then they taste good.
Okay.
So they have fiber and protein and antioxidants. And they have really good, they have monounsaturated fatty acids. They have minerals like magnesium and copper and potassium, some B vitamins. So they're really good for you. And because of the MUFAs, the monounsaturated fats, they can lower your blood pressure. They can fight cancer. They help you with belly fat levels. There's a study that showed that if you eat at least 3 servings of nuts a week, you have a 39% lower risk of premature death. My goodness. So we're all set.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big nut eater.
We eat nuts. I eat nuts all the
yes.
time. Yes. Yeah, I like nuts.
All right. Turmeric. Turmeric is a good thing to help you to age slower because of the antioxidants found in curcumin. And it's a great antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, helps to maintain brain, heart, and lung function. It's been studied in insects and mice, just so you know, and it can help them to live longer. Millions of Indians can't be wrong. So eat plant foods. There's a shock. So if you're eating a lot of processed food and you're not eating your fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds, whole grains and beans, then you might want to rethink that. So our friend Frances is coming to visit, and she said she's been eating road food, and please point her towards the vegetables. So we're going to do that. She's going to get yummy local organic or hyper organic vegetables today, which will be very exciting. There's a low risk of premature death, reduced cancer, metabolic syndrome, depression, heart disease. And plants have wonderful things in them. They have antioxidants, polyphenols, folic acid, vitamin C, carotenoids. They have all kinds of good stuff in them. So even vegetarian and vegan diets, which are higher in plant foods, that there's a 12 to 15% lower risk of premature death. Now, I would argue with that because if you had a PGAN, you know, what Mark Kaiman calls a PGAN, somebody who eats a lot of produce and a reasonable amount of protein, and they eat basically this, a super healthy vegetarian diet, but they add animal protein to it, they're going to have a similar lifespan profile as the person who's a vegan. If you're a vegan and you're eating, because there's vegans and there's vegans, you can be a vegan and be a carbotarian. And if you're a carbotarian, meaning you're eating
I love that term.
I didn't make it up. That you're eating, it might have been Jade, my friends Jade Tita and Kayoni Tita, who came up with that. Carbotarian. That if you're carbotarian, you're calling yourself a vegan, but you're eating, you know, bread and pasta and rice and potatoes, and that's all you're eating, right? And you're not, you know, paying attention to your greens and your beans and your nuts and seeds and things like that. It's almost pointless you'd be healthier to eat nothing but meat than to be a carbotarian. Now, if you have a political issue with that, of course, that's not going to work for you. But being carbotarian is not good for you.
No.
But eating a lot of plant foods, as long as you tolerate plants well, can be very good for you because of all the antioxidants, the fiber, the probiotics that are on them, all of the other nutrients that we spoke of. Other studies there are non-existent or much weaker links with the negative effects specifically linked to processed meat. Anyway, eating a lot of plant foods can be helpful as long. So getting exercise can extend your life.
Let me see. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that?
Mm.
Yeah. So why? I guess we need to repeat this because people just don't hear it.
As few as 15 minutes of exercise a day may help you achieve benefits, which could include an additional 3 years of life.
15 minutes?
Yes.
That's it?
15 minutes a day.
Wow.
So that actually will increase your health benefits, and your risk of premature death may decrease by 4% for each additional 15 minutes of daily physical activity. And I think there's an upper limit, too, that beyond... if you do 150 minutes a week, 28% less likely to die early, and it was 35% more for those who exercise beyond that guidance. So if you do 150 minutes a week at least of exercise, you're going to be 28% less likely to die early. Then you get an extra 5% if you do some high intensity workouts. So if you do some high intensity workouts, it's going to help you more as well. Also, you'll extend your life by, wait for it, not smoking.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go.
Smoking is strongly linked to disease and early death. Did you know that?
God. Groan.
Well, when you smoke...
I'm going to marginally groan.
Yes, I see that you're doing that. Okay. when you smoke cigarettes, unfortunately, if you smoke sugar-cured tobacco, it's going to have all kinds of toxins in it. It's going to have acrylamides, it's going to have arsenic, other heavy metals. You're smoking, burning hydrocarbons. So all of the stuff that you're smoking there's carcinogens, lots and lots of carcinogens and lots of chemicals. There's also carbon monoxide in cigarette smoke. So that's going to reduce your ability to breathe. So if you don't get cancer, you're going to be more likely to get emphysema and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Conversely, even if you quit smoking in your 60s, you can add a bunch of years to your life. So the other thing is nicotine, the nicotine drug in smoking, which, and by the way, there's nicotine in vaping.
Just going to talk about vaping. If you didn't go there,
Is not necessarily good for you because you're still dealing with the nicotine, which can cause cardiovascular disease. And then
really?
There's chemicals in the vape. that are not good for you.
Okay.
No, you're not smoking a burning hydrocarbon, but you're ingesting other chemicals.
So nicotine can cause cardiovascular disease.
Sure. Yeah, it's a cholinergic agonist.
See, I thought it was just that it was the smoke doing that.
It's that too. Nicotine. Well, nicotine.
But if you're vaping, you're not getting smoke.
Nicotine is deadly. If you have
It's bad.
Nicotine,
stuff,
but no, I mean nicotine. If you had a little bit of nicotine in a vial on a table and you ate a little of it, you would die. It's really poisonous.
Really?
So, the amount of nicotine, like when you harvest tobacco, you have to wear gloves and you have to be very careful. Yeah, nicotine is, it's a poison, and, you know, they have just enough nicotine in tobacco that it doesn't kill you, but the nicotine itself stimulates cholinergic receptors, that, you know, special receptor, your acetylcholine receptors, and you have acetylcholine receptors in your cardiovascular system and your digestive system. That's why people who smoke, it suppresses their appetite, and then when they stop smoking, they gain weight.
Right.
So, because there's nicotinic receptors in your digestive system. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, moderate your alcohol intake. So, don't smoke. Moderate your alcohol intake. If you drink too much, it's going to give you liver, heart, pancreatic disease, and overall risk of early death. But moderate consumption is linked with a reduced likelihood of several diseases and a 17-18% decrease in your risk of premature death. So if you have a little bit of alcohol, so say you're taking tinctures, like I like to take motherwort tincture to help my cardiovascular health. So I'm having a little tiny bit of alcohol every day. That's no big deal. And if you drink wine, looks like wine is particularly beneficial because of the polyphenol. So wine's going to give you more bang for your buck over other kinds of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And women should be having one or two glasses of alcohol or less a day, and a maximum of 7 per week. And men, a maximum of 14. For men, can handle it more than women for some reason. That just overall statistically, just the way our metabolism works. Unfortunately, we have an increased risk of breast cancer if we go more than 7 drinks a week. Prioritize your happiness.
Mm.
If you've got stuff in your life that's making you unhappy, you should fix it. So if you have a relationship that's making you unhappy, either fix it or get out. If you have a job that's making you unhappy, again, fix it or get out. If you're just generally unhappy, get counseling. Do whatever you can to get yourself to be happy. If there are things in your life that are making you unhappy, it's really a good idea to work on those and make it a priority. It's okay to be happy, and it's nice for you to be happy. And if you have a hard time being happy, get counseling. I know sometimes it's not as simple as that, but try to see if you can figure out whatever you can do to help with that.
Or, you know, if you can't afford the counseling, maybe you could meet with some friends, or you could, if you're a member of a church group, you might be able to talk to someone there. There's a lot of avenues out there.
And you can get some counseling online. There's all kinds of YouTubes. There's counselors who post YouTubes, and there's all kinds of things you could do to get, to help you cheer up. And along with the get happier is avoid chronic stress and anxiety. So if there's something making you stressed and anxious, you want to do stress-reducing activities, and you also want to work on whatever is making you anxious. Because if you're anxious all the time, you're going to have more of a likelihood of premature death, probably from cardiovascular disease. Laughter and optimism can be helpful, and that if you're pessimistic, you have a 42% higher risk of early death than optimistic people.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Really?
So you know all that schmoozing we do on Saturdays? That's good for us. So, because healthy social networks, you can live up to 50% longer. So schmoozing. So when I get, you're still schmoozing. I should stop that because it's actually good for you. Having a strong social circle is a big deal. Be more conscientious. So if you're more organized, that's going to make you happier. It says conscientious people may have lower blood pressure and fewer psychiatric conditions. I don't know. I'm pretty conscientious and I'm pretty stressed.
Hmm.
I'm not super likely to take dangerous risks, but when I feel overcommitted, I feel stressed. But I am a pretty organized person. I'm usually pretty amazed at how much I can accomplish in a day. Coffee and tea decreases your risk of chronic disease because of the polyphenols and catechins that are in green tea. And coffee has flavanols in it that are antioxidants and reduces your risk of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. So caffeine actually has some benefits. It actually has some benefits to cardiovascular health. But if you have too much caffeine, so you have to find your sweet spot with caffeine. Some people metabolize it more quickly than others. If you're a CYP1A2 fast metabolizer, you can have more coffee than other people. And that's an advantage. So if that's you and you can like drink a cup of coffee and go to sleep, you can drink more coffee because you're going to get the antioxidant benefits. If you're like me,
that would be me.
And I'm not like that. If I drink too much coffee, I get heartburn. And that's something we should probably talk about, coffee and reflux. I'll probably touch on that next week. And developing a good sleeping pattern. If you don't sleep enough, or you sleep erratically, or you work shift work, that's not good for you. If you sleep the same amount of hours every night and you get into a good sleep. So if you're having trouble with sleeping, that's something you want to work on. I wonder if it would be useful to pick a few of these and expand upon them next week.
Yeah.
All right. Because I'm going to go now.
Oh, wow. Because we are.
Yeah.
We're there.
All right. So it's, it's time for me to go. So it was interesting talking about some interesting ways to increase your lifespan and also to update you on what to do about Lyme and thyroid and stuff like that. All right. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
That's me.
You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.